welcome to episode 82 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Sydney.
Today we're talking about games that require ongoing investment. These are games that keep releasing new stuff. Maybe this is optional content that changes how you can play the game, the newest expansion for Terraforming Mars or Scythe, for example. Sometimes it's new army or cards for a competitive game like Warhammer or a living card game. Or maybe it's a collectible card game like Magic, Pokemon, or Chris's favorite, Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yay.
We'll take a look at some of these games and maybe a bit of the psychology behind what keeps us buying them. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our newest patron, Faz Flintham. A thank you to all our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Kitty. Thank you, Sydney.
Hi.
So, quick announcement, update, news. Josh is fine, but he spent the entire week in the hospital, apparently. We got this like really scary picture from him last.
Yeah.
Was it the Tuesday?
Yeah, it was Tuesday.
Yeah. It was like Gloria, his SO, significant other that I will use, sent us a picture. It's like, Josh is fine. He'll be good to do the podcast on Sunday. And we're like, oh, what's going on?
Sure. He gets a pass this time.
He does. So he'll give you the entire story next week, but I think he's out of the hospital as of today and just doing a little bit more recovery. Something about lungs and air on the wrong side of it or something.
I don't know.
But on happier news, Sydney and I just got back from GaryCon.
Woohoo!
Where I played a lot of role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
I played a game, well, Brett from Gaming and BS. So this is turning out to be the con where he and I just kind of hang out the entire time. So he was running a Wraith game, and Wraith is a World of Darkness-based game. It's a very, very, it's a role-playing game where you play ghosts, essentially.
Fun.
Yes. So he was playing an introduction scenario where you start out living and you become a ghost by the end of it.
Cool.
So the way I think of it, though, is the very first game I've ever played with him, he kills my character. Great. So the next day, he's like, oh, I'm going to run a D&D game. Do you want to come play? And I'm like, sure. And he kills my character. So then his wife surprises him with his showing up with his son. And his son runs a game for us. And he kills Sydney's character.
I just went to the level of hell with the demon when he was banished. So everyone else won.
Yeah. It was a very... His son's 11, did a great job running the game. He was like running for all the adults. So it was a lot of fun. He got these cards that would basically allow you to, you know, you pick a card, it tells you what the adventure is, the scenario. You pick another card, it gives you the map. You pick some more cards and it gives you the monsters. And then we just, all of us played characters from these cards. And he's like, I just want to try it. I want to like use these cards and do this. And we're like, all right. So that was a lot of fun. So we had a really good time there. Let's see. Jason has taken me up on the D&D session. So Jason's a Chicago local. And
he might win the award for our closest listener to where we record.
Yeah. I think he's maybe a half a mile away.
Maybe.
If that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's definitely in the neighborhood. But I still want to open it up to if anyone else is in Chicago or will be in Chicago, I would love to get like a listener group together. If we can't, Jason, we're still going to play. I have some built-in people.
Yeah, we have enough.
Yeah. So if you're interested in that, shoot me an email. Just let me know. We'll set up like a Saturday or Sunday, some weekend in the near future, and pick a place somewhere in Northwest Chicago area, which is where we're recording at now. So that will be fun. Maybe we'll go to the Surge.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a cool place.
Yeah, that place is awesome. And it's very game friendly.
Yep. It's a new kind of...
It's a pool hall, but it has tables in front and also has kind of like a coffee bar area as well.
Yep. And there was some gaming there the last time you were there. So, yeah, we could do that there. Let's see. Oh, I keep forgetting to mention this. I have started putting timestamps in the show notes. So if you really hate the announcement section or you just can't stand feedback from other people or, well, nobody wants to skip the Kickstarter section, so I'll tell you exactly where that's at. You can take a look at the show notes and just say, okay, we start the actual topic at this minute and we start Kickstarter at that time. So I added that in there just because I figured it'd be handy to have and... If I don't call it out, nobody knows to look for it. All right. We're doing something. We're giving stuff away.
Giveaway.
Yay. D&D. We're giving away four books. Well, three books and a box set. So we're giving away the starter set, the player's handbook, the monster manual, and the Dungeon Master's Guide. to one lucky winner.
Ooh, all you'll have be to, all set to run your own game.
All set. And if you already have that, let me know, and you can pick three supplements instead. Because all I'm doing is I'm drop shipping via Amazon, and that essentially means I'm sticking your address into Amazon, and they're going to Prime deliver it to you. It's going to be the cheapest delivery ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easiest, too.
Yeah. It's going to be so simple. So as long as Amazon delivers to you, you can enter this contest. And how do you enter this giveaway? Not a contest. It's a giveaway.
every time.
Legal terms. just email me at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. And I'm reading my own email address that I typed in the notes, and I've typed it in tabletop game top, and that's not the right email address, which is why I stuttered on it. So tabletop game talk, name of the podcast, @gmail.com, put the subject March giveaway. You have to enter by March 31st. And if you go to our BGG site, our podcast page on there, and you can get there very simply by going to tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. Go to episode 79. There's a thread there where people are leaving their 10x10 or their 5x5 or their 10x1s or whatever.
Their grid.
Sam is putting together, compiling a list of all of the top games from the listeners. And the threads, there's a bunch of people in there. So if you do that, put your Board Game Geek name inside the email. Let me know you left your 10x10 there, and you will get bonus entries. So instead of getting one entry for the email, you'll get five entries for the email. So we're really trying to build up the threads over there, and it's actually working. There's a lot of input on the role-playing stuff, and a lot of input on this one too. So as an added bonus, what I'm going to do is I'm going to randomly go through that thread, and one person in there will win a $25 Amazon gift card. So I will contact you through BGG and get your information there to get you that Amazon card. Okay, let's go to Kickstarters. I decided to back the Reckoners this week. Technically, I did back two things this week. I know, and there's a few people that follow me, so I just want to be full disclosure. So the Reckoners is the board game that I bought. And just to recap, most of the stuff I've already gone over, but the Reckoners, just a quick recap. It's a cooperative board game based on the Brandon Sanderson books. It starts out with Steelheart is the name of the book. It's the Reckoners series. There's a trilogy there. It's really cool. It's about basically people who get superpowers, and then they turn into supervillains. And there's like non-supered people that are fighting off these villains. So the board game is that. You are fighting against these superheroes and your non-superheroes, and you're trying to coordinate with each other to find out the weaknesses for the villains and take them down. It's a real-time co-op. It's really cool. And I decided I have to do it. So
it made me watch Mystery Men this week, since we talked about it last week.
I love Mystery Men.
What a great movie. And it was like close enough that I was like, now I have to go watch it again. And I, you know, have a baby. So that's all I do all day is watch movies.
I want to have a baby. And I can watch Netflix more.
Yep.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. Totally. Yeah. There's some other stuff that happens too. But one of the side effects is I've watched a lot of Netflix recently.
That's awesome. There's still time to back this one. March 15th is when it ends. It's $69 for the base, $119 for the deluxe. That's the Reckoners. So what am I watching? This time I'm watching... So I talked about Dice Throne last week or a couple weeks ago, and I had a side chat on it.
Several times.
This one is Dead Throne. No relation at all. But
lots of thrones going on.
There's lots of thrones going on. This one looked pretty interesting. So the blurb here is, it's an open world cooperative or solo adventure game where you're trying to be the player that combines all of the pieces of this relic thingy to win the game. So you can play it solo, but you can't play it co-op. It's either competitive or whatnot. This game is a passion project for sure. It's already funded. The base game for this is about $110 for the early bird. There's still like $300 available at this time. It is funded though. And then the normal version or the deluxe version, no, not the deluxe version. There's an early bird, which is $111. If you miss the early bird, then it's $125, which sounds like a lot. It's a Kickstarter though, so there's a number of things there. But this The production quality, as far as what they've done to make this game easy to play, is worth backing it alone. The box itself opens up like kind of like a briefcase, and in the back is where all the different market cards go. So this is open world adventure. You go around yourself and do quests. It looks kind of like Mage Knight. It's as if Talisman and Mage Knight got together and had a beautiful love child. Now, love I don't like Talisman. I'm not a huge fan of Mage Knight. But this looks like a really cool, like...
Their beautiful, beautiful baby is very... Yeah,
exactly.
Intriguing.
And to throw a little bit of sugar on there, and this is probably artificial sweetener, because it's also a roll-in move. So you roll and move being you roll the dice and you move that many spaces. Now, it's more like the way Xayah does roll and move. So you roll the dice and you can move up to that many spaces. So I'm like, all right. And the dice, they're six-sided dice, but they don't go 1 to 6. They go 2, 3, 4, 4, 5, 6. So there's kind of a little bit more of that range. And the roll is 2d6. So you're rolling both of those. So you're usually going to go 8 spaces. But I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. I'm like, I'm all for this. But you run around, you do quests, you can get spells, you can buy traps, you can lay traps for the other players. And you're trying to like take their piece of the relic and put everything together so that you can beat the game.
Cool.
Or be the winner of the game. But the box opens up like this briefcase. You have the market on the back of the briefcase where it would open up. And then all of the little cards you could have these little card things that like fold out. So it holds all of the little, like I've seen a lot of games where you have like 18 different decks of tiny cards. This one has like 6 or 7, but it has little slots for all of them. And then the player boards, this 10 different hex pieces that make the big map, which is looks just like Mage Knight when you put it together. But the player boards are half a hex, so they fit into where the board would be, and they hold all your cars and like your equipment, and you have a backpack that you can put stuff on. You put stuff under your backpack, so nobody can see inside your backpack except for you.
You're really into game containers right now.
I'm just saying, this is an insert you can't throw away because the insert is the game. So anyway, check this one out if that sounds in any way interesting. It's an open world, meaning that you can kind of just take your own path to victory, but there's a lot of paths. It goes through April 14th, so there's quite a bit of time to take a look at this. That is Dead Throne.
I'm excited about this next one.
All right, the next one, Mystia?
Sure.
Mystia?
Mystia. So this one's kind of a fusion of hand management, area control with some player customization, asymmetric gameplay, some variable scoring system. Okay. I wrote down some notes here because this one's going to be tricky. So it has 5 floating islands. Kind of, they're little circle things. And if you imagine a circle in the middle and then 5 circles that float around it. But the circle in the middle is empty. So as you're playing this, each island has 3 different areas on it. So you're going to put your armies there. You're going to move your armies around, you know, typical move armies area control thing. But you can also move the entire island. So where you might be adjacent to one island at one point, you can choose to just move the entire island, which moves all your figures and anyone else that happens to be on it as well. And you have these monsters that are also on the board that can potentially be attacking. So everyone's fighting against the monsters. But if I can move this island in place so this monster's going to attack you instead of me, it's like, woohoo, yay. And so there's a little bit of deck building mechanics where you're buying cards, but there's no deck. So you're buying cards, you're putting them directly into your hand, and then each turn you can play the full, like all your hands, all your cards. And of course there's a rest mechanic where you can get all your cards back, and there's this meditate mechanic where you can get energy, and there's just a whole lot of stuff going on here. It's a miniatures thing. It's Kickstarter. Lots and lots of miniatures. All kinds of cool stuff. Let's see. The base game of this one is $105 for the collector's version, which is only $12 more. You get a hardcover art book.
Interesting.
And if you back it at that level, you get your name in the art book. If you back it at all, you get your name in the rule book. I like when Kickstarters do that. It makes me feel like important. So this ends on March 29th, and that's Mystia. 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 Jeremy pointed out a few Kickstarters to me, too, so I figured I'd mention these. So the first one is a Munchkin Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's, you know, Sydney, they can't hear you scowl. You have to scowl verbally. There you go. But it's $30. If you like Munchkin and you like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or you like either one of those, for $30, you really can't go wrong there. The other one that he pointed out was Pocket Sub. It's a quick abstract game of nautical warfare. And this one's also only like $15. This is cute. It's a small box game. It has hexes. You have little wooden submarines you're going around. It reminds me of kind of like the old computer game Snake, where you're both drawing snakes and you have to like not run into someone else's tail.
I played that on my calculator all the time.
So that's, imagine that you're a submarine and you go around and you're leaving mines. And
it's like Snake meets Minesweeper.
Not Minesweeper. Well, maybe. Maybe yes. Minesweeper.
Yes, Minesweeper. Fine. You're trying to avoid the mines.
Yes.
But also not run into it. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you just have all these things. So when you move, you have to move your sub three spaces. So if there's not a safe three space path to go, your sub blows up, last sub standing wins. And it's all open information, so there's no randomness or anything. So it's basically just an abstract strategy game from 2 to 4 players. All right, what did I review this week? I'm scrolling through a whole bunch of stuff. Helionox.
The
deluxe edition. So I brought this. We didn't get a chance to play it with you guys, but I played it. And all right, I have to start with the negative first, just because apparently that's what I do. I start with a negative and I end on a positive note. This game's iconography, you can't tell, but I'm grabbing the bridge of my nose.
Actually, you can hear it a little bit.
You can
hear your frustration through the microphone.
So this is the deluxe edition. It should have lots of cool pieces and stuff. And this game existed. It was released back in 2015. And I will go on right now saying it's a really, really deep deck building game. Like, there's some really cool stuff here. But the iconography is painful. Like, it took me forever to figure out which cards went to what. And so they have these there's 4 faction icons. Great. Okay. Whatever. And then they have these, you have money, which is credits, and defense icons. Well, one of the faction icons is the same thing as the defense icon.
Oh, no.
So you have all these cards that have this little defense icon in the upper left corner, but there's also these crisis cards, and they also have a defense icon in the upper left corner because that's how much defense you need to defeat that crisis. So you're going through, and there's a few other things on that because you also get victory points there. To make it worse, you have these little like wooden circle discs things that are your embassies that you can put on these different planets. Like, not necessarily planets. You have Earth, the Moon, basically our solar system, that you can have embassies on these different areas. Well, that's fine. And the player colors are, you know, red, blue, green, and white. And on the white disc, it's basically a light gray with some white paint on it or things that show your little embassy symbol. Well, the defense token is a white wooden disc.
Oh, no.
With a white drawing of the defense icon on it, which is the same icon for that faction.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So anyway, once you get past that, when you're playing the game, the defense tokens don't actually have anything to do. They're not in the same places, so you don't have to pay too much attention to it. It just took me a while to get past all of the iconography and the issues there. The game itself actually plays fairly quickly and easily. The game plays, everyone gets 9 turns. That's sort of the concept of it. You just get 9 turns, and you're going through this crisis decks, and there's 5 different areas. There's the Earth, the Moon, a couple moons of Saturn, and another place. So let's see, Earth, Moon, Mars, Sirius, and Europa. So you're moving your ship around to these different areas to to basically fend off crises that are happening there. That will give you points. And you are also buying cards that will help you get more credits or more defense. You're trying to satisfy missions. There's a little bit of, with the expansion, and the deluxe edition has the expansion built in, there's some pick up and deliver. So I need to get a resource from Earth and drop it off at Mars, and that will give me points. And if you're playing cooperative, which is what this introduces, this is a really puzzly, heavy cooperative game. It's a good one. You have a closed hand, so you're encouraged to communicate, but it's not like everyone has all the information. And you still go in turn. So if it's my turn, I can be like, can anyone help me deal with the crisis on Earth? And then we can talk about doing that. But otherwise, I'm trying to face that crisis. And we're trying to get through the mission deck. So I really did enjoy this game once I got past the setup. It took me watching 3 different Watch It Plays. I couldn't find a single one that was showing me how to set it up because there's some also ambiguity in how to set up the crisis deck. You need some critical crises, but those are in a different set of cards. And I had to I thought they were promo cards, but no, they were actually the cards I was missing. And the little player mats have microscopic text, so you really can't use those as a reference, and it's black on dark blue. And otherwise, Helium Inox, the deluxe edition, it's pretty good. Let's go talk about something else.
So let's go to some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So our first feedback is from Sam on RPGs. One thing I wonder about is the age that most RPG gamers have their first experience. You mentioned that your first negative experience came in middle school. How prepared is a middle school student to run a great session where there is a balanced storytelling, flexibility, and understanding of the needs of every player to have their moment?
So this is interesting because I have told my story of, you know, my first thing. I was actually the DM, and I mean, I was like probably 14 at the time, so he was old. Could have been anywhere from 25 to 45 at that point. Everyone's old.
Yeah, they're just all grown-ups.
Yeah.
Grown-up can mean anything at that age.
Yeah, but it definitely wasn't a middle school. Like, it wasn't a middle school group or anything like that. And I found, and maybe it's just because I'm old now, that typically new players coming in are adults. They're college age plus. And that's the kind of group I'm getting. When I get much older, probably like 30, 40s type of area, actually 40s probably plus, it's a lot of, I used to play this, but I haven't played 5th edition type of thing.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. I would like to see this as well. I don't know what the stats are for school, like middle school, high school, you know, college age.
I feel like it used to be much more regular for it to be younger kids, middle school, high school age, and now it's becoming more and more of a grown-up thing.
Yeah. Well, also, as game clubs are picking up at schools and high schools, they are playing it on their own.
Yep. I mean, like I say, we were playing with Brett's son, and they have a gaming club at their school, and his son and his daughter are running Dungeons & Dragons there. Like, nobody there has ever played it before, and now all the kids are, like, swarming to it because there's two kids that are willing to run games there, so.
All right, so Sam continues. My earlier D&D games were definitely more along the lines of player versus GM, and I stuck around more because some of the players were close friends, not because of the game itself. However, over time, we matured as we got older and more creative as players and GMs. Those who continued
branched out to play other games, yeah.
With other systems and other groups. This leads to my second point, and one that I think you were headed towards in the podcast. The chemistry of the group is so important, maybe more than anything else. We play games to have fun, and RPGs, in many respects, are more social than board games as a whole. They are a story made up in the collective minds of the group. That sharing of ideas is far easier in a group that has chemistry and trust. And in my experience, whether in gaming or in the workplace, that trust and chemistry in a group usually needs time and multiple sessions to develop.
Yeah, and that's sort of why I suggested starting with combat. I know that it may be controversial, but the thing with having combat is it's so mechanical. You don't need that trust of like playing in your characters, you know, telling a story and...
It can be really awkward to start. Like, I think that was what I kind of highlighted is like my big barrier to entry was I thought like, oh, I'm going to have to play a character. And in combat, you don't have to play a character. You have to look at your character sheet and roll the dice. And that's so much easier.
Yep. And you're breaking the ice to future playing of the character. So you know how it feels to have been in a combat. You can even use that as part of the character's experience in the future.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it is, I think it's saying it's an icebreaker is the best way to put it, for sure.
All right, so continuing. Most Hollywood media, think Stranger Things, D&D is visualized as prepubescent rite of passage and associated with kids who were, should we say, social outcasts. That may have changed since I was young, but those social stereotypes are definitely a barrier to entry into RPGs. I don't think that board gaming has quite the stereotyping associated with it. Board gaming in media, such as episodes of Black-ish and This Is Us, present board gaming as a shared family experience that bonds multiple generations, a far more positive message.
Yeah, I don't know that it's... I don't think it's as nerdy of things. Like, Stranger Things is a great example of nostalgic.
Yes. Like, it's like history. It's the 80s gaming culture. It's not the current gaming culture.
Yeah, also, we're seeing it from the inside. Like, we all think that it's something that we see on a regular basis or have experience with or have friends who have done, whereas people on the outside who don't do this on a regular basis might actually consider it a little nerdier.
Yeah, well, I think today we have things like Critical Role. Like, Critical Role is practically, I don't know what the ratings are, but everybody, like when I talk about D&D, it's like, oh, like that Critical Role thing. And when I started my work game, all of the people that I was playing with who hadn't played D&D in forever went out and like binged watched Critical Role.
Remind us what Critical Role is.
Critical Role is a YouTube actual play. So it's essentially watching people play Dungeons and Dragons. Now, these guys and girls are like professional improv actors types of things. So they're, and it's edited to make it entertaining, but that's what people are seeing. And honestly, I think that there's pros and cons to that. It definitely gives it a better feel for entry level. It doesn't feel like a nerdy thing, but it also is intimidating because like, oh, I have to be like that, and you don't. So actually, let's go on to the next one because I have something I want to talk about right after that one too.
From Chris Anderson on BGG. I just finished listening to the episode. You guys did a good job explaining why you what you love about RPGs, and clearly you all have had good experiences with it. But I did feel like it was a lot of why to get into RPGs and not very much how to get into RPGs. I am in the same boat as the majority here who either don't have a group or their group isn't interested. For me, mostly I'm playing with my wife, and we have a group of friends who like games but are unreliable at best as far as getting together. I guess I was looking for tips on finding an intro-level RPG experience without learning to become a GM and wrangling an equally inexperienced group, something I'm just not going to do.
So, which is fair. And it's really difficult to say, okay, this is how you get into role-playing if you can't get a GM, somebody who can bring that table together and takes responsibility for rolling it or running it. You can do it in game stores. You can do it at conventions. And I know for sure Chris and his wife are planning to play some role-playing games at the conventions they're going to go to this year. So that is one way to do it, but not everyone has a convention either.
So if you have a good group of friends, you can go nose goes.
Yeah, I suppose you could go nose goes. So what we're going to do, because this is something I'm actually very passionate about, and I don't want to start up an actual play podcast. There's plenty of them out there. But what I am going to do, and we've talked with the group, is I am going to get the six of us together. So typically we are Josh, Kitty, and Chris. Well, we always talk about Spencer, Sydney, and Gloria as if they're in the room with us. And sometimes they literally are in the room with us.
But hi. Spencer may have snuck through the room earlier even.
Yeah, you would have never. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get us all together and we're going to do a series of side chats on how I would bring a group from zero to completing your first adventure. And that will be leveling up your characters, you know, doing all of that. We're going to use the starter set from Dungeons & Dragons because I'm giving that away. And it's a super, super easy way to get into things. So look for that over the next, I would say, probably 4 to 6 weeks. So Josh has to get his lungs back in order. You know, Kitty and Spencer need to be able to be conscious for more than 3 hours at a time. So things like that. But we are going to do this. And hopefully that'll be a good introduction. And my hope is you could give the first side chat to somebody where we go over the rules and the characters of the beginner box. They could listen to that with their character sheet in front of them and come to the table and just be ready to play. And as a DM on that side, you can listen to me run the game and trying to get some tips and pointers on how to run that game and how to manage a table. It will be podcast-esque where, you know, one person talks at a time type of thing, but there's no way to avoid all the jokes and laughing and all that stuff that gets in there. So look forward to it. It's going to happen.
Eventually.
I've said it here. Eventually. And this isn't YouTube eventually. This is on side chats. We're going to do this. So one other thing I wanted to point out by Sam, he sent me an email a couple weeks ago that I missed. He says that he started using coin capsules to put cardboard tokens in. And then I'm like, what's a coin capsule? So I looked up, what's a coin capsule? And these are these little plastic things that you put like collectible coins in. And they have them in all kinds of sizes. So if you have, he says he uses them for scythe tokens for like the little encounter things on scythe. That's like the size of a dime. And you can't even see them on the board because they just kind of blend in. But when you put them in this little coin capsule, it pops out. Or for Arkham Horror, where you're drawing little cardboard chits from a bag, if you put them in the coin capsules, it gives a better feel to pull them out. So I thought I'd throw that out there. I thought it was a really interesting thing. He says he uses the 10 millimeters for scythe and the 25 millimeters for the basis for Imperial Assault, the 25 millimeters ones work really well with a little bit of nail polish around the rims. So anyway, thought I'd throw that out there.
All right, so let's go to a quick question from one of our listeners. This question won't fill an entire show topic, but we think it's interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Aaron. Just curious, as a quick question, where do you guys draw the line between tabletop and video games? I.e. the Kickstarter you mentioned, Chronicles of Crime, with the VR glasses. Is that a tad too video gamey?
So my line is, it is a video game if it has no board game components. It's a board game if it has board game components, which is it's a terrible line because, you know, back in the 80s, wow, I'm going to really date myself. This was 90s. There was a VCR Clue Trivial Pursuit game where you'd play Trivial Pursuit and then you had the VCR and you'd watch something and then you'd play the game on that. So, I mean, that's more of a board game than a video game. But then you have these video games where you have these little the plastic figures that you put on there. And it's like, well, is that a board game or a video game? Well, like, that's definitely a video game because everything that you're doing is on the video game side versus the board game side. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
The line is also blurred when you're actually playing a board game in video game style, like the apps that have been talked about where you're playing an actual like Pandemic Legacy on the computer.
Well, Pandemic. I can't wait till Pandemic Legacy is on the computer. I'll play that. I'll play that like 15 times through.
Oh. Try to get the best score.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, I think it is, can you play it without the video game component? That feels like a board game to me. So this VR thing, you don't have to have the VR. It's just an added.
But you do have to have the app.
So that's where I was, because I was also thinking of XCOM.
Yep.
Where you literally can't play without the app. And those are definitely still board games, so my definition's broken.
I'm going to say that there is no black and white here. I think there are video games that are absolutely video games. There are board games that are absolutely board games. But there are hybrids that are a combination of the both, and you need both sides. It becomes a new classification. It becomes a hybrid game.
And they're not my favorite.
I'm still jury's out. I'm taking them one game at a time, so we'll see. All right, speaking of jury's out, let's go talk about, I don't know, spending a lot of money.
In this episode, we're talking about games that we keep investing money in. But why? Do we really need to keep spending money on games we already enjoy as is? I guess that depends on if you're Chris or not. In any case, we're going to take a closer look at these games and try to figure out what's really driving us to keep spending money on the same game.
So, and us means me, but also any listener who is addicted to spending money on games that you already own, you just want to own all the other stuff. So this topic came from a couple different people. I'm going to give two people credit for it. So if you guys and gals, it's a guy and a gal, email me your address, you will get a t-shirt. I only have small, mediums, and large left. So if you are outside of that range, let me know. I'm working on getting more extra larges, and I haven't had any requests for extra smalls, but our smalls are pretty small. So anyway, Garrett Buckman?
Buchanan.
At least you guys corrected me in stereo. Came up with the essentially the name of this is games that require ongoing investment. And Zoe Ng asked about LCGs, which certainly fit directly into this topic. And she mentioned that she really likes Arkham Horror. So this is what we're talking about. Buying stuff. Let's go to the big one. Actually, I don't even know where to start with. This is what I'm going to do.
I know where to start.
All right, go.
Magic.
Oh.
This is magic. There. Of course.
All right. So back in 1992 or 3.
Hop in the way back machine.
Yeah. I think they're on 25 years of magic. This game comes out and it's like, hey, let's put random cards in a pack. And people will collect them and we'll make rares and commons and uncommons.
And some will be shiny.
Some will, not at that time. Oh. All of them were just cardboard. If you ever looked at the back of a magic card, which most people have them in sleeves that hide the back of the magic card is the most dated thing in gaming today because it's 1992 things. And there's the name Deckmaster on it. Nobody knows what Deckmaster is. Nobody has, like, I think that was going to be a line of games or something, but they can't change the back of the deck or the card.
That's a great trivia question.
It won't shuffle in with everything new cards. Else. Yeah. Yep.
So it's like this super, it's kind of iconic now, but it's a super dated style. You'd never see.
I just come back around. Now it's classic.
Now it's classic. Yeah. So this is really, this is where the CCG started. And then soon after that, they're like.
CCG means collectible card game.
Exactly. Or TCG, which is trading card game. So either one was used interchangeably. And people saw, oh, this is making zillions of dollars. They're literally just printing money. And by literally, I mean figuratively, because but they could change the cardboard into money. So there were so many companies that kind of followed that pattern and started making their own collectible card games. And the Gen Con after Magic came out, there had to be like 40 different collectible card games. And people trying to just duplicate the quote-unquote magic of what made Magic the Gathering popular. And very, very few succeeded. I would say none, really.
I don't know. Pokemon gave it a run for its money.
But that's the thing. Eventually, Pokemon did. But who did Pokemon? Wizards of the Coast. The same people who did Magic the Gathering. Also, they had the Pokemon license. So that was a very successful one. And how Yu-Gi-Oh! Became popular, because it's still very successful, I have no idea.
We'll have to ask Jack. Yeah. We'll get my brother on the show to talk about Yu-Gi-Oh! He's the only person I know who at any point in their life cared about Yu-Gi-Oh! And he has since stopped.
Yeah, I'm just assuming that the creators of that game made packs with something. And I'm not talking packs of cards. So, just say. But, so that's where you just started throwing money. I mean, I was in high school. Well, I guess it was my freshman year or junior year of college. And we would drop hundreds of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, easily hundreds of dollars. And we have a really good friend who still does that today. You know,
I know two people off the top of my head, and I probably know more if I thought about it harder, who still are very into Magic the Gathering.
Yep.
If it's your hobby.
Yeah. And we will do a full episode on this eventually. I keep trying to get Rob on the show to, like, let's talk about Magic. So I think we're going to do that at some point. So we'll get into Magic as its own thing. But I think we can all agree that if you are in the collectible card game tournament circuit, like you want to play competitively, whether that's at stores or at conventions or just pick up drafts where you go to the store and they find eight people and then you play a tournament of eight people, you have to keep buying cards. And you don't have to buy random packs, but you have to buy the current hotness, the current great card that came out. Otherwise, you're just not relevant in that market or in that field. The question is, the game is good. I don't know anyone who's played Magic who says it's a terrible game. It's a pretty straightforward game if you don't look at the 700-page tournament FAQ. Just saying.
I don't know. I think it's a... It takes an afternoon to figure out, at least.
Sure, sure.
And it takes a long time beyond that to actually be good at it.
They're really good at keeping it current because they keep coming out with mechanics that beat other mechanics that they've come out with. So if you have a really good deck and you can keep it that way because you don't need to buy anything else while nothing else has come out, then when they come out with a new mechanic that beats your deck, you have to change it and buy more cards. Yeah.
That's if you're making your own deck. But one of the things you can do is just anytime a new set comes out, which is every 3 to 4 months, just buy the starter decks that come with it. And if you keep those starter decks around, they're actually pretty competitive these days, especially with each other. So if we got two decks or even three decks and we wanted to all three of us play, we could just play right now. And those decks, as long as we're all using the same deck, we're on an equal playing field. And we don't need to keep buying cards
sure.
and buying new stuff.
You could also, a lot of collectible card games or even living card games, any games where you can collect the cards, people post their decks online. And so it still takes the money to buy the cards, but that way you're not shopping for the cards that you want individually. You're going and building the deck that you want. Yeah.
Well, you are shopping for the cards you want individually, right? You're buying yeah. just what you need in the set. Versus
also, you're not spending the time. You're not sinking your life into that, like, what combination will work best. Somebody else has done that work for you. Yeah.
But a lot of that drive for Magic players is building those decks, finding those combos. You know, so that is one of the things where it's like, I want all the cards. But even the most hardcore people...
Gotta catch them all.
That is the problem. It's why I can't play Magic. Because I want... If I play Magic... I'm fine, just here's my deck, but I want to own every single card. So, and there's where we get into, does Magic really require continued investment? Yes, a little bit. Does it require you own everything? No, not at all. And if you have that desire, maybe you stay away from that game.
Because it also takes a lot of mental energy to know every card in existence.
Surprisingly, it doesn't take too much because... If it's the only thing you're looking at, it's kind of like at work when you're doing this repetitive thing and it's like the stuff that you just automatically memorize. When I was playing Magic, as soon as I saw the picture, I knew what the cost was. I knew what the abilities were. I knew everything about it. I knew the monster stats. It was an instantaneous recall, like, because you're living in that world.
Speaking of living, Sydney threw out LCGs, living card games. What is the difference, Chris, between a collectible card game and a living card game?
A living card game is always released by Final Fantasy Flight Games because they have a trademark on it. But this concept actually applies to a lot of things. Dominion could be considered a living card game.
I would agree with that entirely. Yep. That was one of my rabbit holes when I was in college. I started my friends on Dominion, and we had gotten to the point where the first box had gotten a little bit old, and so we got the second box. And then we realized there was, like, more and more, and I ended up owning all seven after a period of time.
Yep. So a living card game, or I guess a non-collectible continuing expanded card game. So the biggest distinction is, for a living card game or a non-collectible card game, is you don't have the randomness. When you buy an expansion, whether that be a deck of cards or a box for a Dominion or something, you have every card in that expansion. There's no chasing rare cards. You might chase some promos here and there, but those are usually exceptions and you don't need those. But that's what the difference is. This is something I can actually get into a little bit easier as long as it's on the ground floor where I'm buying. Because Fantasy Flight, they will give – every single time I want to say Final Fantasy. Fantasy Flight, they will – essentially, they release a box and then they release six decks, packs that go along with that. And then they release another box and then six decks. That just tends to be their thing. And there's a bunch of them. There's the Game of Thrones, which we'll talk about that in a second. There's the Lord of the Rings. There's Android Netrunner, the Star Wars card game. So two I want to focus on are Star Wars and Game of Thrones. Star Wars, because this is a game Sydney and I really like, and they're discontinuing it. It's their last cycle. And when I heard that, I'm like, oh, thank you.
No!
We haven't played this game in a year, but I've been
studying.
Studying, yeah. But I've been keeping up with all of the cards. And now that the game's done, I'm like, great. I have all the cards.
It's a complete game.
I don't need to buy anything else. Thank you.
Now you can buy a fancy box set to put all your boxes in.
I already got that.
Of course. Of course you did.
Now, let's take a look at the Game of Thrones LCG.
That one works really well because you have to have a specific house and there are rules based on what you can have. Well, I guess all card games really have rules on what you can have in your deck. But because they come out the way that they do, you can buy certain packs looking for the specific cards you want, and you don't have to collect them all. And they don't actually give you a single pack with a single house. You have to buy multiple packs because each pack is a theme instead of a house.
Yeah. So Fantasy Flight, that's what they do is, here's a pack. Here's 10 new cards. And there'll be duplicates of all those cards in that pack. But they'll be spread across all of the different factions. So no matter what, you need to buy this if you want all the cards for your particular faction. And if you're a completionist, you want
you
all
just buy
the
them
factions.
All.
Yeah.
But you have them all, don't you, Chris?
No. So this is why. And I could. So Sydney played this before we met. But she played first edition.
And thankfully, what happened was they ended up ending that. They kind of did a restart. They hit the restart button. And so every card that you previously owned was invalid. And they started with producing all these new cards. And I'm like, this is a good point at which to stop playing.
Yep. So Game of Thrones second edition comes out, which says on all the things, not compatible with first edition cards. So you have a complete first edition. But nobody's playing that anymore unless you're just playing it amongst your friends. But you can't go to a convention and play it because they want to play the new shiny stuff. So Sydney was like, nope, I'm not getting into that. I'm not doing it. So I didn't get any of it. I did not get into it because she was not interested. I'm like, all right, well, the Star Wars one, I can get on the ground floor and I can stay up to date on those.
Game of Thrones also has to be interesting because the IP it's based on isn't finished. The series is still going. Mm-hmm. So until the series is finished, how can you wrap up the card game? That just feels like ridiculous to me.
Well, and if you look at something like Lord of the Rings, that one is a cooperative living card game. And you make your deck to go against these different scenarios. And you're building – all of these games have, at least for Fantasy Flight, have this in common where you're building your deck and you want to construct your deck. And I was looking at that. I'm like, oh, this looks like it would actually be kind of cool. There's 10 years of cards – I can never own them all. There's no good entry point that I can see. I am just going to avoid this and walk away.
And if they did it right, then you have to own them all to beat all the scenarios that they created.
Sort of. They do an okay job at making cycles where it's like, okay, here's the this, you know, storyline, and you can just get this storyline. But it's still like, I'm missing something. I know that if I got that other adventure pack or something, I'd have the item I need to beat this one.
I feel like I might have to look into this. I love the Lord of the Rings. And this is one of the few games that seems like it has any replayability based on the Lord of the Rings IP.
It's a very popular game. I may have the base set because you can still get the base set from pretty much anywhere. So I'll bring you the base set and you and Spencer can try it out. It's not bad. It's definitely not a bad game.
I think one of our listeners suggested it after I complained that I didn't have a good Lord of the Rings game that I liked.
Yeah. And there's another, like the one. Anyway, we're getting on tangent there because I also want to cover Arkham Horror really quick.
Okay.
Because the Arkham Horror Living Card game is something that was released 2 years ago, I believe. And it's another one I got in on the ground floor of. And this one's another cooperative game, which is actually what made me look at Lord of the Rings. Because the Lord of the Rings franchise, I'm a little bit more interested in than the Arkham Horror franchise. But the Arkham Horror game is really good. There's some really in-depth stories, decisions to make that go between scenarios. You're building characters through decks. And like, there's a lot of really cool things there. And one of our listeners recommended that because I put on my 10x10 to play solo. And I'm forgetting who, so I'm not going to mention the name because I would guess between three names. But he said that I should play it with somebody because when you're sharing the story, it becomes far more interesting. So even though Sydney hates co-op games, I might rope her into this.
I owe you a backlog of playing games.
She just finished her last CPA test yesterday, so Woo-hoo! Now she has all this free time coming forward. So I do want to read one thing from Terrence, and maybe there's like two other things too, because he's actually interpreting our subject a little differently than I was. He's like, the subject is not about collectible or lifestyle games. It's about games that require ongoing investment. And if I may parse the topic a little, require is the key word. I know that it's been covered before, but some games seem incomplete, and once you added an expansion game, play improved dramatically. But what would require the next expansion for ongoing investment? So we covered a little bit, like with Magic, you're required if you want to stay up to date. With Arkham Horror, I think this is a requirement. If you want to keep playing that game, yes, you can play the same scenarios over and over and over, but if you want to follow the story to completion, you got to keep buying the cards.
Well, I'm actually going to bring up a different one that I know you don't like. Something like Cards Against Humanity. If you own a set of those cards and it gets old amongst your friends, they just keep coming.
I guess that does qualify. Like, if you just don't want to use the same phrases, you gotta buy new phrases.
But now it's time to talk about my favorite game, Time Story.
All right.
And it's great. But you have to, like, you can't replay the scenarios. You can't. There's no replayability. You have to keep buying the new scenarios to keep playing the game. And they got me.
Yeah.
They got me so bad.
Well, and
Time Stories.
What makes it worse is you don't know if the next scenario is going to be as good. Because they're very different from each other. But you have to. If you want to keep playing, you have to keep buying the scenarios.
I don't think we've run into like one that I was like, oh, well, that was a waste of time.
No, because they do a really good job at introducing a new mechanic in each one, which keeps it interesting. But also, the core mechanic is still there, which also keeps it going.
Yeah. Like, it's still the same thing. You're already hooked. You know the rules, except maybe a little tweak here and there. Okay.
And you might be able to argue, it's like, okay, well, you're not required to buy the expansions. But I think you totally are if you want to keep playing Time Stories.
Yeah.
So we keep doing it. And that's not a cheap expansion.
No.
It's like, even if you get it cheap.
It's like buying a new game.
Yeah, it's it's at least $25 in your cheapest places, essentially, if you're not buying it used.
I was going to say, to be fair, it is a great game to buy used because somebody's going to play it once. And yeah, they might not have shuffled the cards back in, but you can really easily organize the cards without spoiling it for yourself too much. They're all really easy to order. Yep. So just by looking at the side that is not the spoiler side.
That actually brings up another good point. Any game in which you're destroying something, if you want to play it again, you're buying it again, whether it's a legacy game or an escape room or anything like that.
Yeah, and I will give escape rooms, I think. So actually, Anne mentioned, she's like, I've never thought of one and done games as ongoing investments. It's a game that I play some number of times. After that, I either buy another game in that series if I enjoyed the first one, or I stop. I see that decision as deciding whether or not to buy a new game, not as ongoing investment in a game or system I already have. Honestly, I find that after you've added a number of expansions, new content to a game, the game tends to become watered down and less interesting, that or the rule complexity skyrockets.
Which reminds me of Carcassonne.
Yes.
Where we bought the Princess and the Dragon expansion.
Yep.
And I think we had the Rivers and Lakes expansion already mixed in, but we didn't have any of the other ones. But just in case, when I was reading the rules for this expansion, there is a table that is half a page long explaining how the dragon will interact with every single different piece from every single different expansion. So if you have the pigs, then this is what the dragon does to the pigs. And if you have the big meeple from, I don't remember which expansion, this is how it does that. And it's...
Nope.
Yeah. Yep. And I just looked at the table and I was like, all right, I'm not buying too many more of these expansions.
Yeah. And that's the thing where with Carcassonne is, are these expansions required? You certainly don't want to play them all at once. And there are a couple expansions. Like, I really like the ones that add a little bit of player interaction.
I was going to say, you really enjoyed The Princess and the Dragon, because your complaint with Carcassonne is that you just, it was very focused on the table, and the Princess and Dragon expansion made you look up at the other players.
Yeah. But you can look at that, and actually, let me get back to the escape room games. Because legacy games, I would say for a legacy game, if you've played it and you're done, you don't have to spend more money to continue to play it, because you actually wouldn't be continuing to play it. You'd start over playing a different game. It's kind of splitting hairs, but to me, it doesn't feel like I need to spend more money on that. I've gotten the entire experience from it. Escape room games is a little different. And again, it's one of those things where it's like, I really like this escape room game. If I want to get that experience again, if I want to feel that in the next scenario or whatever, I have to go out and spend more money.
Especially the ones that are in a series, like Exit. They all feel like kind of the same. Once you do one, you know basically what you're going to face in the next one, except, you know, not really the same theme. The puzzles will be completely different. You won't like feel like you've already solved this, but you will know what to expect. So it feels almost kind of like Time Stories, where it's like I'm buying the next step in the same game, unlike a legacy game where, sure, I'm buying the next step if I buy the next one in the series, but there's no real connection.
Yeah,
but the
story for sure. But you still want it, right? Yeah. You just want it. So, and then there are a few expansions. Like, I think the Zaya expansion's kind of a required. Once I put the Zaya expansion in, I would never take it out. Mm-hmm. Like those things can happen. When you're looking at something like Cosmic Encounters, if you want a higher player count, you have to own the expansion. Catan does the same thing. It's a two to four player game. Scythe, yeah. Even. But you have to buy an expansion to add more players to it. So that is like, it requires you to spend more, but it's kind of requiring you to spend more to get a bigger game, which I think is okay. I actually don't mind that so much. Right. Everyone gets a cheaper game. And for the exceptions that need that higher player count or want that more content, you can go and buy these extra pieces.
Speaking of buying more things for a game like that, there's also investing in maybe components or the inserts or things to hold your games. There's ways to spend money to make your game better.
I never even thought about that. Like the inserts, like the broken token inserts.
Yeah.
It's kind of required for some games.
Absolutely. Or
at least some kind of storage system is required.
I feel like we covered this really well, though, and we had a whole show topic about, I don't remember what we called it, like, pimping out your game.
Yeah, I think we did an actual...
We did. Mm-hmm. We did a whole episode. Sure
did. We did on pimping, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't call it pimping out your game, though. No. We called it something slightly better than that. I just remember because Christy posted all those awesome pictures of all of her cool extras.
But
I had to go look up what game or what episode it was.
But I do think organizers can fall into their own category, because right now it's a huge thing, right? Because I just looked at putting together an organizer for Gloomhaven, which is these broken tokens, like... several hour construction projects and stuff. And for Gloomhaven, you have to invest in some kind of storage system. It's an amazing game.
It saves hours.
But yeah, if you want quick setup and cleanup, you have to have a system for that. And it just doesn't come in the box. You have to get something more. All right, let's talk a little bit about why we do this. Because we have a game, right?
Do we have a problem?
I know I do. Like, I do because, and I've talked about this before, like, I need to complete my set. So Sam kind of, he and I look at the things the same way, I think, sometimes. He's like, when he heard this topic, he immediately thought Fantasy Flight Games, a company where nearly, FFF. A company where nearly every game has many, many expansions and has drained my wallet for many a game. My question is, how often do we feel you are missing out for not getting an expansion because you feel the game is fine the way it is? And how often has an expansion spoiled a game for you? So I would say typically expansions never spoil a game for me because I can always just choose not to use it.
Absolutely.
It's like, this expansion doesn't really do anything for me. I can take it out.
Other than taking the time to unshuffle all the cards.
Yeah. Not having the expansion it doesn't spoil the game for me, but it spoils there's just like a hole in my heart that's just like, this game has more and I don't have it.
I kind of feel like I don't know what I'm missing out on and I'm having a blast playing this game. So if I need to play more games to have more fun, then I don't need to add more to this game right away.
So you're saying I should do less research. So if I don't know there's more out there.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't have anything to say in the Kickstarter segment.
Kickstarter. And this is why I have to back for everything. I actually, and this is Terrence's fault, he pointed out someone on BGG who was selling all of the Kickstarter exclusives for the base Arcadia Quest and Arcadia Quest Inferno for a really good price. So I'm like, well, I got to throw a bid in there because it's a whole bunch of stuff I don't have.
And it's on your 10x10.
And it's on my 10x10. And there's a whole bunch of stuff I don't have. So I'm like, all right, I'm throwing a bid. I don't know if I've won. I'll know after the podcast whether or not I won it or not.
So at what point is this not investing? At what point is this just indulging yourself?
At every point, this is indulging yourself.
Yeah, there's no real, like, sure, maybe like, oh, I'm going to sell my Magic cards and get more money for them.
That's a thing.
It is a thing, but that's not why you buy them.
Sure.
Yeah. Some people do. I think Magic is the one exception where some people just buy and sell Magic.
That is also true for Pokemon.
And Pokemon.
They're like, I'm going to get in so much trouble, but they're really, really, really similar to each other.
They are. Not in gameplay, but in the mentality around it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The kind of person it attracts
really
is very, very similar. But, I completely lost where I was going.
Well, no, but you are right, though. Outside of those cards, because you can buy a box of Magic cards, open them up, and you can sell the individuals for more than you bought the box for, almost guaranteed. And so many game stores just bank on that more than anything. However, outside of that, board games are not an investment. They are an indulgence in all ways. You're not making money on them in the long haul.
It's like Barbies. People buy Barbies to play with them. But there are some people out there who hold on to those collectible Barbies and resell them. And that's the whole reason they buy them. But almost everyone who buys a Barbie is buying it to give to their daughter, son, child, whoever, to play with.
Yep.
It is not really an investment.
Yep. There are short-term things you can do. If Kickstarter, for example, if you buy a Kickstarter exclusive game, or you have a game like from Cool Mini or Not that has a bunch of Kickstarter exclusives, when that game is in its hot cycle, so just as it's releasing, you can typically sell what you bought for more than you got that for.
If the game goes popular.
If the game is popular. So you have to be very careful with the designers and stuff. It's really, what's the speculative? You know, that's what you're doing, your speculative investment, which typically what happens in that type of investment is you just lose everything.
Yep.
You have a bunch of inventory you can't get rid of. So I never look at this, again, short of some of the CCGs, as investments. It is, hey, I have this money. I don't want to burn it, so I'll give it to someone else and they can
get
burn it.
Get a game in response. Yeah.
Those are your only options. Those are my only options.
Saving doesn't exist in your home.
Not for him.
Why would I do that? I married an accountant. She can deal with that. Yeah, I don't think it's an investment. So why do we do this?
Because it's fun.
Exactly.
Because we need more.
Exactly. Needs, human needs are funny things. We need food. We need water. We need air. we also need to be happy. Like, I think that's an actual real need.
Mental stimulation.
Yeah. And we all get that in different ways. Some people like, you know, hunting, fishing, cars, motorcycles. You know, there's all of these different hobbies out there that people spend their money on.
Some of us might have a closet full of yarn.
Entire room full of yarn.
Hey. I got a lot out of there when I had a baby.
But this is like board games are it's our way of kind of, you know, filling that materialistic need. And we can all argue whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing or whatever. But as long as you know that that's what you're doing, it's like, I just want to have this because it's something cool to me that I want to have. Are you going to pass this down to your kids? Probably not. We're going to do an entire episode on board games as art because it's something I really want to like talk about and think about. Because that collection, what are we collecting? It's cardboard, right? Entertainment. But it's really just cardboard and paper. Some nowadays, lots of plastic as well.
And there's wood and metal and, you know.
Sometimes.
Bits. We're collecting bits.
We're collecting bits. And the bits are only as functional as we can get them to the table and make them functional for us. So, like the Star Wars collectible card or the living card game, I will spend hours sleeving them, sorting them, making decks. And that's not lost time to me. That's just kind of like, you know, what I do to de-stress. And Magic players do the same thing, making decks, and Pokemon players and things like this. And having all of that stuff is something I can just kind of fiddle with and play with. And it's my pastime. It's no less or more productive than sitting down and watching TV for 4 hours, you know, and I can do both at the same time.
It does feel a little bit more productive because at the end, you do have a thing that you've kind of done. Whereas with TV, it's literally just time spent staring.
So another reason to put money into it is to be a part of the community that you're putting the money into. Because if you're going to a game store, you might buy that game when you wouldn't otherwise because you want to support your local game store.
Yeah, and I'll do that quite often. Like when I'm at a convention, if I'm talking to the designer, I've mentioned this before, I'll buy the game because their passion is in it. You know, one of the Kickstarters we just talked about, the Dead Throne. Yeah, I'm very likely to back that. For a number of reasons, I think the components are really cool, but because the videos on the Kickstarter page is the designer just talking passionately about what they've created, and that gets me excited about that. I want to support this person because it's, I don't know, I like being part of this community. I like supporting this community.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, I never mentioned the other Kickstarter I backed, which was a Strongholds and Streaming D&D supplement. And I actually didn't even put it in the show notes, but it's a role-playing book for 5th edition. So I'm like, oh, I got to get this because he does a YouTube series. His name's Matt. I forget his last name. Starts with a C. But he's going to do a streaming thing, and he's really, really cool. So I'm like,
so that's why I didn't count as
that's why I didn't
Kickstarter.
Because it was a book. It wasn't a
game.
Board game. So I can't use that exception very much, though, because role-playing games tend to be... Like, you think $100 for a board game is expensive. Like, the all-in for role-playing games, supplements and stuff, is like $500, $600 oftentimes.
Wow.
It's like crazy. So you get the deluxe foil covers and all that kind of stuff.
And they're giving you less physical stuff. That's interesting.
Yeah. But I digress. the point is, I like supporting people and I like spending money on this hobby.
So do we think we've covered it?
I think we've covered it.
So then, in conclusion.
Are we concluding?
Shut up and take my money.
Right? that's pretty much it.
Yes.
I limit your ongoing investment games or your games that you keep spending money on. That's my only advice. Limit them to a few. But now that Star Wars is done, I can pick up another LCG. We'll see. There's none out there right now. I didn't like the Five Rings one, so not doing that. But
yeah, the hobby's going to get worse for you now that I have time to play more games.
No. It'll be great because now you're going to be playing all the Kickstarter games with me. And I'd be like, it wasn't a waste of money. So, all right, let's do the whole outro thing. Follow us on Facebook. So one of the things, so Katie's been managing the Facebook, but I'm also going to put Sydney on the Facebook thing because she's very into Facebook and now that she's not studying for CPA. So if you want to follow us on Facebook, Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. So we're going to try to be more active there. It's probably our least active I am active at the Tabletop Game TLK Twitter handle, and I'm also active at Game Master Chris, also on Twitter. You can support us via Patreon at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. And, oh, we have an Instagram too, right? Tabletop Game Talk?
Yep.
So that's also on Kitty, which she usually takes pictures of when we're playing games sometimes.
Yep.
So I want to take more pictures of the games we're reviewing and things like that. So I'm trying to be more and more.
Login.
Yeah. I'm trying to be more and more, you know, posting pictures of stuff and putting them online. So you can follow us at all those places. And let's see. Oh, if you want to follow me at Kickstarter, you have to friend me on Facebook first. And I'll put a link to my Facebook profile. So if you want to friend me on Facebook, go to my Facebook profile in the show notes. Once we're friends there, and make sure you put a message saying, hey, I'm a listener, because otherwise I just ignore people I don't know. So I'm a listener. I will friend you back, and then you can follow me on Kickstarter, and then you can see all the stuff that I'm backing when I'm doing it, and keep me honest. On that note, we're going to make Kitty do the rest of this.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan, Josh isn't here again, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dogg, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Bradkey, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Andrew Rivera, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, and Faz Flintham. Until next week, where we talk about adventure story games. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. We should just increase the podcast length to like 2 hours. 3 hours?
As a listener, I love it.
As a lady with a baby, I don't.
Fine, we'll stick with an hour.